Hey, everybody, this is the Big Ticket, Variety, and iHeart's new film podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin, and today it's episode 3 of the 3-part Avengers Endgame special. Coming up, Paul Rudd talking about that very weird Ant-Man and Thanos theory, and Karen Gillan tries to impress us with her celebrity impersonations. Welcome back. This is The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Right now, I've got Paul Rudd talking about that very weird and kind of gross Ant-Man Thanos theory. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
We're talking hotels. Okay, you're starting off in the business. You say in your head, one day I'm going to be a superhero.
It wasn't anything I thought about.
Right.
When I started off in this business in the early 1940s, they weren't really making a ton of superhero movies. It wasn't a genre that was as popular then as it is now. I never could have predicted this.
How many you signed up for?
I signed up for, I think, just for the two that I did. And then it was, you know, I was in Civil War. And so it's kind of the way it worked was they kind of...
Whenever they need you.
In a way, yeah. But it's not like signing a, you know, like you're doing a 7-year contract to a television show or anything mm-hmm. like that. And I'm sure each thing is probably individual.
So you have said, though, that signing on to this was like when you signed on to Friends, like the phenomenon.
Well, it's the only thing that I could even compare it to a little bit in that it's an established group and one that is recognized worldwide. And I have had the same kind of the same feeling of showing up a little bit later and just not wanting to get in the way and kind of looking around in a mild state of shock as to, you know, seeing these people and their costumes and the props and everything up close and personal. It's a similar feeling.
What was it like seeing yourself for the first time as Ant-Man?
It was very exciting. I remember when I put the suit on for the first time, they were trying to, you know, the fitting for the first one anyway. And I went through many fittings, but that very first time it was, you know, it just made it real in a way because I kind of saw what it might look like, and it was very exciting.
Is it strange to know that you're part of this universe of 22 movies? And can you name all 22?
No. I might be able to, actually, and it's not strange.
Surreal.
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, what this has become is unique, and mm-hmm. To be a part of it is, it is a bit surreal, but it's really exciting and it's gratifying in many ways because no matter what country I go to or who I'm meeting, whatever the age, it's people have a connection. They know about these characters and you know, these series of films. And it's a pretty cool place to be.
Why do you think this universe resonates so much with people?
Well, I mean, the comic books have for decades and the characters, you know, kids have grown up with them, and then their parents grew up with these same characters, and their parents maybe grew up with these characters, and they're, you know, they're archetypical. Mm-hmm. So many of them represent what we all kind of strive to be or want to be mm-hmm. in our own lives, and yet they are also all flawed and human in ways, and we relate to that and connect with that. And so, you know, I think that they're super human and heroic, yet still relatable. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that strikes a chord with a lot of people.
Now let's talk about this fan theory of Ant-Man going up Thanos' ass.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and?
One, would you want to? Two, does Thanos even have an ass?
You know, what do you think?
I just don't think Thanos poops.
You don't think so?
This is deep.
Yeah,
no,
this
no
is...
No pun
this,
intended.
Yeah, this is... Well,
just take a crack at it.
No pun intended there either. You know, this is an interesting... This is what the internet does. It just kind of floats an idea out there. You're not the first person to wonder if Thanos is, I mean, he's Thanos, right? It couldn't be that easy.
I mean, he'd need like 15 ply, not 2 ply.
He also has like a space stone, right? So, I mean, in a way, anything can be as expansive as possible.
And though, if that was a theory that happened, basically that could happen in every movie with Ant-Man.
It seems a little far-fetched to me. Yeah, I don't. I think we've exhausted that topic. Okay, but it'll be interesting. We'll bring Josh Brolin in here, see what he thinks about it.
Josh, do you want Ant-Man up your ass? Sorry. I can't even believe we're talking about this, but we are.
Well, I can't believe it, but you brought it up.
I did bring it up because I find it quite amazing what the fans will come up with. Mm. How do you deal with a fandom? I mean, it is enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And they analyze everything to the point where, like, do you see, like, something being analyzed and you're like, that's, no one was trying to make a point there, but they think they see something there.
Well, I think it's a testament to the passion that many people have for these characters. There's a history that, you know, to them that we don't see if you've just seen the movies. You know, if you've read the comics, you know other storylines. And the fans want to pay homage and be respectful to those storylines. And yet there are so many people out there that want to try and figure it out. I think that these fan theories are interesting to read. Sometimes I don't really follow them too much. I'd heard about this one, obviously. I was asked about it at the Ant-Man junket. It's been around for a while. Yeah. But it is fun to have a little bit of an inside, inside information. And I read something and think, wow, that is just so way off. But people might, it's, I think that's part of the fun for a lot of people to try and figure these things out. And, you know, there are many websites that make it their business to try and find out.
Should there be an intermission during Endgame?
I haven't seen it. I couldn't tell you.
It's long, though, for a movie these days. It's over 3 hours.
Well, I'd have to see it. And I think it's a fairly epic story. We're the 22nd?
22nd.
And there's a lot of ground to cover. So the main goal here was we want people to be satisfied and not feel cheated in some way. You want to pay the proper respect to the characters and the story that it deserves. And I'm guessing that they felt that this is it. This is the right time.
Were you surprised to see who got disintegrated? Who got disintegrated or who disintegrated?
I think it's who disintegrated.
Yes.
But was I surprised? Yeah, I was a little bit. I mean, I was really kind of in that moment. And when I saw Infinity War, and I knew it was coming,
right,
by the way, I knew beforehand, it was still so emotional and powerful that when it was happening, I was just an audience member. I got caught up in it like anybody, and I was, I was really kind of surprised to see it all, and I thought it was very effective.
What is the penalty for giving spoilers? If you gave a spoiler to me right now, how much money would you have to pay to Marvel?
I'm not even going to attempt to try and find out.
And you haven't seen Endgame yet?
No.
Mm-hmm. No one has?
No.
Makes it easier, though, so you can't spoil things, right? But you know stuff.
Well, I know some stuff.
But
I was there when they filmed some of it.
Yeah, but you don't know how they're going to cut it together.
That's true. I don't even know if they'll use it.
Because also the Russos have said even the trailers, they've purposely done things to throw everyone off. So you can't really see what's happening.
God, they're good.
They're really good.
That they're
Marvel
really
universe
good. They're really good.
They're awesome. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
That was Paul Rudd. Now we're going to a quick break, but we'll be back with Don Cheadle recalling the moment he was asked to replace Terrence Howard in The Avengers. Welcome back. This is The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Now we've got Don Cheadle.
How are you, you, sir?
I am good. How are you?
I'm good. So have you seen Endgame yet?
I've seen as much Endgame as I think everyone has seen, which is the trailer and whatever little promotional things they're doing online.
Do they do that on purpose so you can't mess up and say what happens?
I think yes. I think it's one of the most, you know, heavily guarded secrets in moviedom. And it's good, right? I mean, we don't want people to be out there ruining the experience for everybody else. So it's nice, but it is, they're incredibly secretive about it. And that's why Mark Ruffalo, I don't even know why he's here doing press, but here he is.
So what is the fine? What is the penalty if you say something?
Well, they start you off before you even do press with an injury. So it's they just let you know that they're very serious.
So they break your legs first.
A finger. They just take a finger. It's like the Yakuza. They take a little finger and then you understand. Don't say anything else.
Could you believe it's been 22 movies?
No, it's they keep saying that and I start trying to count them down and it's
could you name them all though?
No, not even close. But no, it is a real testament to the staying power of the mythology of these characters and the way that Kevin Feige and Marvel et al. Has been able to really weave all these storylines for this long and keep it fresh and keep it interesting and just keep it exciting.
I interviewed Chris and Steven the other day at a WGA Foundation thing, and I said, how do you keep the story straight? I even said to him, I said, is there a time where you're, like, you're writing a movie and like you forget to give a certain character dialogue because there's so many?
Yeah, I think all of those things are happening. And really, thank God, we're not tasked with that you know, job. But the Russos, you know, Joe and Anthony, every day was, with every scene, it's a long conversation before we shoot about where we're coming from, where we're going. And we, you know, these movies were cross-boarded. We shot them both at the same time. It wasn't even back-to-back. They were scenes that were happening from the next one, Infinity War, and some from Endgame. So trying to remember where you were and what just happened. And we'd shoot things and come back the next day and they go, we can't use any of that because that's not, we forgot that this, or we're gonna add this in, or we're gonna use this shot. So it was very schizophrenic for them and seeing them at the end of the process, they were both really worn out. They were both really run down.
How did everyone find out who disintegrated? Is it
on the day? Kind of on the day. They were like, you're walking through him and he's going and he's Sam's disappearing. I was like, oh, word, okay. Because we didn't know. You know, we
did you
they
feel
kept it
bad?
From us too. When I inhaled him, that was tough.
inhaled?
That was a rough one. I had to inhale. I was breathing and he turned to dust in front of me. No, but that was, it actually was kind of an emotional moment. And I think they handled it very well in the film too, because these are, you know, these are real characters and they're people that we've come to, you know, to love and have these connections with, and then boom, they go away. So it was a great way, because you don't usually see a film like this end with that kind of,
right,
you know, pathos at the end of it. You're waiting for the big upswell at the end. It's like, no, there's no upswell.
There's a lot of people just gone.
Yeah.
With the snap of the finger, just like that.
Yeah, boom.
Who would you go? Who would you make go away with the snap of the fingers?
I think we all know. I'm on Twitter pretty heavily. yeah, I've snapped that dude out a couple times. But, you know, that's what an awesome power, right? You know, what a sick glove to have.
I mean, isn't it also, I mean, when you look at it, it's just like having your finger on the button, right?
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that's another thing that the Marvel movies do really well is intentionally weave in themes and weave in, you know, topics that through still the prism of Marvel deal with a lot of the things that we're dealing with and speak about a lot of the things that are very topical that makes the movies feel very current and fresh and now and gives people a lot of, you know, you can tie into it. And it's for kids and it's for adults and everybody can find their own place in these movies. And I think that's why they constantly work and people have such a thirst for them.
And Marvel, Black Panther, Captain Marvel. Yeah. We're seeing diversity in superheroes like we've never seen before.
Yeah.
Why do you think now it's happening and it's so successful?
Well, I mean, it's something that obviously Stan Lee intended a long time ago. You know, he had the whole diaspora of all of these different characters and all these different people and the relationships that they have from when he created this, these ideas a long time ago. And now more than ever, as you say, it's really time to celebrate all of that in a very real way. And we can see that when that has a platform and when you do that, the reaction is overwhelming. You know, Captain Marvel just passed $1 billion. You know, there's a huge, huge desire to see different stories from different voices. And it's great that we're getting to do it.
When you were starting out in the business, did you ever think you'd be playing a superhero?
I did not. I knew it was something that I thought would be fun to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when this came along, I had gone in early and met with Robert and Kevin, and there was, you know, some people who wanted me for the part and people who wanted Terrence for the part, and Terrence got the part, thank, you know, God bless and everything. And then as things transpired and I came into it, you know, I was at my daughter's birthday party. She was like 7 years old, and they called me and they said, okay, it's going down. Terrence isn't coming back. We're giving you the offer. But we need to decide quick because we don't want this to get out, and we're going to, you know, release it. So, so we need to decide. It's an 8-picture deal. I forget how many movies it was, but it's like, that's like 10 years. That could be 12 years that we're talking about. They said, well, we need a decision in an hour. I said, to decide? I don't even know what the part, I don't even know where it's going. They're like, hey, you got to just take a leap of faith. And I said, well, I'm at my daughter's birthday party. They said, oh, take 2 hours.
They're like, let her blow out the candles and get back to us.
Go ahead and cut the cake and then get back here and say yes or no. So it was a decision that had to be made, you know, pretty quickly.
Did you ever talk to Terrence about it?
Yeah, I saw Terrence the next day, actually.
Wow.
After the whole thing went down, we met, you know, saw him on the Warner Brothers lot. And I'd known Terrence for years, you know, produced Crash, put him in Crash. Mm-hmm. We never had any beef. There was never anything between Terrence and I, ever. And this was something between Terrence and Marvel and his people and all of that. So we didn't really have a thing about it. You know, I literally pulled up behind him incidentally on the lot, and he was going in for something else, and he came out and we chopped it up, and he was like, I'm good with you. I said, I'm good with you too. This has nothing to do with us. And
that's amazing.
We're straight,
you know? That's amazing. Okay, so Disney Fox merger. Which X-Men do you want to come over to the Avengers?
Oh, wow. Who would it be?
Or Deadpool or Wolverine?
Yeah, I think we want to see that.
Yeah.
I just want to see Deadpool with these characters. And that just something about that.
I feel like
insane.
Everyone's saying it should be Deadpool.
Yeah, we want to see how that works.
I did want to get a little more serious with you. The Georgia abortion bill. You signed your name to that letter. Why is that so important to you?
Well, I think it's really about a wave of human rights issues that we're seeing, not just in our country, but really across the world, you know. And there feels to me that there is a real ideological struggle between trying to go back to a time of again, which what is that? I don't even know when again was. You know, I think of a comedian who's become sort of persona non grata, but his joke about going to the future versus going to the past, and, you know, him saying, he was saying as a white man, you know, I can literally go to any year and they'll just snap out a table and be like, hey, I was here. He goes, but in the future, oh, I'm not going there. Because we're going to have to pay for everything we did, and I'm not dealing with that. But, you know, there's as things progress, obviously more people want to pull back who are frightened of what that potentially could mean. And I just feel that specifically with something that has already been adjudicated, this has already been decided. Roe versus Wade has been decided. And to want to go and relitigate that. And this bill is particularly draconian with what it wants to do with women, that it's just very important that we speak up and show up. And I think if we don't, then we have no one to blame if things turn to again.
Right. What do you think is going to happen in 2020?
I have no idea. I mean, really, I think it's probably too early to tell. There's still obviously a lot of dust that has to settle around things that are ongoing, and people are having to, in this kind of a horse race, find their voice and find their lanes. But something needs to change dramatically and drastically, and I hope it does.
Do you think it will?
I tend to be cynical and somewhat skeptical about our ability to pull ourselves out of it, but I'm hopeful that it does at the same time. And I know that hope without work is pointless. So we got to roll up our sleeves and make the change that we want to see.
What inspires you to roll up your sleeves?
I don't know, probably my family, probably what I come from, probably my parents instilled something in me very early, even earlier than I probably recall, you know. But I just know that I was always told that, you know, to fight for what you believe in and to stand up for people who can't. And, you know, you can't start a fight that's illegitimate, but you can end a fight that's that is for the right cause. You know, you can fight for a cause and are supposed to. So I don't think that stops just because you become an actor or whatever, you know, position that you are fortunate enough to have. I think, in fact, it, you know, requires you to do it once you're in the light.
Let's have a little fun. How well do you know your co-stars? Robert Downey Jr., has he won an Oscar?
No, he's not.
He should, though. You would think he would have.
He's stolen. He stole an Oscar. He showed it to me, but he has not.
Chris Hemsworth.
He has not won an Oscar.
Was he on Australia's Dancing with the Stars or Australia's Got Talent?
I think Australia's Got Talent, wasn't it? I think it was Dancing with the Stars, wasn't it?
He didn't show you his dance moves lately?
No. I don't want to see that.
Scarlett Johansson did an album, a cover of one artist, all songs by that artist. Do you know who it is?
No.
He's like, why?
Do you?
Yes, because I'm asking the question.
Because you did the research. Yes. Right. Well, if I could go on my phone, I would probably find all these answers.
Tom Waits.
Yeah, Tom Waits. She did a whole Tom Waits album. Him.
She's never jamming out on
the
set.
No, she doesn't jam out on the set.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Yeah.
Thank you. That was Don Cheadle. Now, I'm going to take a short break, but when I come back, you've got to hear Karen Gillan and her celebrity impersonations. Welcome back, everybody. This is The Big Ticket, and I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Right now, Karen Gillan. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. How are you?
So tell me everything about Endgame.
Okay, so this is what happened. Hold on a second. You almost got me.
What is the penalty? What is the fine? If you do spill something.
I don't know. And I don't want to find out. I mean, I saw Ruffalo accidentally live stream some of the last movie from his pocket on his phone and also give away a couple of spoilers, but he still got his job. So maybe it's not as severe as I think it's going to be.
What did it feel like when you found out who was going to disintegrate?
I felt like I'd made some sort of sports team. Like, yes, I made the cut.
How did you find out? Is it in the script? Is it that day?
Yes, so it was in the script. But I didn't get a full script for the movie because they kept it so secretive. So I only got the scenes that I was in. And so I only knew that the people in the scenes that I was in were disintegrating. So I had to wait for the movie to see who really was gone.
So like even your co-stars don't talk to you about spoilers?
Well, some of them do. We kind of tried to piece together a few things, but we shot these movies back to back. And so I kind of quite quickly figured out, oh, so-and-so is not here anymore, and you can piece it together.
What's it like to watch them disintegrate? It's sad.
You know, it's more sad when you watch the movie.
Right.
I mean, truly, when you're filming it, it's just this. I don't know how sad that is. No, to be fair though, Tom Holland disintegrating, I thought that was pretty emotional when they were filming it, and he really took it to the next level with the emotions, and he really didn't want to go, and that did bring a little tear to my eye.
Because it seemed like he was the only one who knew he was going, really.
Yeah.
The other ones, it seemed pretty quick.
Yeah, they were a little caught off guard, but Spider-Man knew.
Did you ever think you'd be playing a superhero when you were growing up?
No, it's really not the type of thing that you sort of think is plausible, especially for me. I'm from the top of Scotland in the middle of nowhere. And I mean, those are, you know, movies from a magical land called Hollywood that doesn't actually exist. And so I certainly never, it wasn't on my list of things to do because I didn't think it was a thing that I could do.
And now you're directing, though, yes. Which means when are you going to direct an Avengers movie?
Good question. I keep asking Kevin Feige when that's going
to
be. I would love to direct a Marvel movie. Yeah, for sure. I don't know which one. It would need to be the right one. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't just do any film. I think it would need to be one where I had a strong feeling that I was the best person for the job. And obviously, that's not every movie that comes your way.
Which character, besides your own, do you sort of say, hey, I want to know more about him or her?
I'm really excited about the Black Widow movie. I'm really intrigued for her to kind of have a whole movie to show us who this character is.
And she doesn't talk much.
No, she's very stoic and everything's bubbling underneath. And I love that about the performance. And I'm ready to kind of see the glimpses, maybe some more glimpses of who this person is.
Why do you think it's taken so long to get a Black Widow movie? I feel like it's should have happened sooner.
I know. I think everybody kind of feels that way. I think we're only just starting to, get together these female-led superhero movies. I mean, it's kind of a new thing and we're living in this time of change at the moment. And so to see Captain Marvel do so well, I was crying in the cinema, just like so happy that she was smashing it and people were loving it. And so I think it's time to see the Black Widow movie. It does feel like she should already have one.
Right,
it really does.
Intermission. Should there be an intermission during Endgame?
No, we're telling everyone to wear diapers to not leave for the bathroom.
Great. I love that product tie-in.
Yeah, so.
Diapers, Avenger diapers.
Oh my God. Can you imagine a different one for each character? Come on.
They have Ziploc bags
I'm
out there. Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yes.
They have rehired James Gunn. Could it have been done without James, do you think?
Yes, but it wouldn't have been the same Guardians that we know.
Mm-hmm.
I think that watching the last Avengers movie, Infinity War, I mean, it's definitely possible to maintain the tone of the Guardians with new filmmakers. But I mean, the tone of those movies, I can only describe as James's personality. I mean, it's his sense of humor, his writing, his taste in music. These characters are extensions of him. I mean, like, it's a really personal project for him. And so it definitely wouldn't have been the same version of Guardians.
Do you think he was treated fairly? Do you think what happened was correct?
I mean, now looking back on it, I think that it's become more fair. We've gotten back to a place of fairness.
Were you surprised when Marvel said, you know what, we're going to move on?
Yes, I think everyone was so shocked. It came from nowhere with no warning. And so everyone was just taken off guard. It didn't even seem like it was real. And then it was like, really? We're going to make a movie without this guy? It seemed absurd to even consider somebody else doing it.
Right.
But then he came back. So we're like, oh, okay, well, and he's making a Suicide Squad movie in between. So it's not so bad.
And now that Disney and Fox have merged, who from the X-Men do you want to see come over to the Avengers land?
Mystique, so that we can talk about having blue prosthetics on all the time.
Or maybe you're related.
Maybe. Or maybe we'll be like,
you're blue-blooded?
Yes, we're blue-blooded related. We're clutching at straws here.
What is it like to have all that makeup on? And how much has it changed? Because I remember actually interviewing Jennifer Lawrence when she was first doing X-Men, and it was this body paint that she had an allergic reaction to, and they had doctor on set. But now she said it's she's not in makeup as much as she was before.
Yeah. I think they sort of cut down the time that she was in it because it did seem really extreme.
Right.
I truthfully would watch the behind the scenes videos of her getting her makeup done while I was getting my makeup done to make me feel like it wasn't so bad. Because I was like, well, look at what she went through. This is only from the neck up. But like, it's just a feeling of like claustrophobia.
Is it? Why is that?
And because I'm completely enclosed. It's a second skin that's glued to me. It's not paint. It's like a skin. And it's like all
so
over.
Weird.
And so I can't really like move my face very much, you know. It's a weird sensation. It's one that it isn't the nicest of sensations, but it does look really cool and does help with the character.
But does it make acting harder though?
I think it's stopping me from overacting. I can't move my face. I suddenly got really nuanced and subtle.
Have you ever thought about walking off set, going to Starbucks? Blue skin.
Oh my God. I would love to do that. And then just like for the name on the cup, like write Nebula.
Could you spell that, please? Yeah. The Nebula N? how many of these movies have you signed up to do?
I think I have, well, oh no, that's a spoiler. You almost got me for real that time. I was like, I have, wait a goddamn second here.
I promise I wasn't trying to get you, but hey.
No, that was almost fun. I mean, maybe I have some more, maybe I don't. You'll have to see the end of Endgame.
Because Endgame's not the end, even though it's called Endgame.
It's the end for some, maybe. Or maybe not.
is that how like sort of Marvel and Disney train you? Every time you say something, you said maybe at the end.
That's not something they told us. But like yesterday, we figured out that if we use the word potentially after every sentence, we're going to be okay.
Now, I want to talk to you about your impressions. I was watching you on Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Britney Spears. Oh, but not doing Britney. A Britney Spears song. Who else do you do impressions of?
I have an array of terrible impressions that I'm quite proud of.
Give me one and let me try to guess.
I like your bow tie.
Katharine Hepburn?
No, Christopher Walken.
Wow, I feel really bad that I said
truly, I mean Katharine Hepburn.
Oh God, I'm awful.
That's
I'm sorry,
not what
Catherine.
I expected.
Okay, let me try to make it up. Give me another one.
Okay, ready?
One more time. I have no idea.
Go on, you have to guess. Action star.
Action star.
Male.
Male action star. I have honestly no idea.
It's Arnie.
Wow. That's amazing. It's Arnie. Okay, quick thing. We're just going to do a little quiz.
Okay,
how well
let's
do you
do
know
it.
Your co-stars?
Yep.
Robert Downey Jr., has he ever won an Oscar? And if he has, for which movie?
Did he win it? Yes. And did he win it for playing Charlie Chaplin? No.
Very nice of you, but he's never won.
He's never won?
He's never won.
That's outrageous.
Chris Hemsworth, was he on Australia's Got Talent or Australia's Dancing with the Stars?
Got Talent?
No.
Dancing with the Stars?
He was on Dancing with
the
Stars. When? I think it was like 2006 or 2007 when he was like a soap opera star.
Oh, before Thor.
Yes. Oh, yes, before Thor.
Okay, I was like, hold on. I think he needs a new agent.
And which Avenger was a stripper before they were an Avenger?
A stripper?
A stripper.
Jeremy Renner?
No, but I like that you said that right away.
No. Who on earth?
Chris Pratt.
No.
Yes. He said he wasn't very successful.
This is the greatest thing I've heard all day.
Awesome. You're amazing. Thank,
thank
you so much.
Thank you so much.
And that was the third episode of The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, I'm interviewing your favorite Hollywood stars every Thursday. Coming up, Halle Berry, Keanu Reeves, and Jared Leto. For now, I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Have a good one.